I'm Adam Bowles, and this is Road Hungry. I imagine I might have some new listeners this week, and for that, I'm really grateful. Welcome to the road, and to today's conversation with Chris Bianco, a guy that a lot of people consider the father of the artisan pizza movement in the United States. He's got plenty of awards and accolades to back up that claim, including a current nomination for a James Beard Award as the best restaurateur in the country. I've worked in restaurants a long time, and I know what I think makes a great restaurateur. Beyond offering great food and service, a person who's really good at this game is someone who gives a genuine shit about the people they work with. You've heard me say it here before. Restaurants at their best are hothouses where little misfit families form. Sometimes that's a trauma response, where everyone bands together to make it through in spite of the hellish conditions and treatment. But when there's real magic at a place, where everyone works together as a team, are there to support each other, that magic usually comes from the top. There's a moment, early in the upcoming conversation with Chris, where you can hear for yourself exactly what I mean. When I was in Phoenix a few months back, I went to Pizzeria Bianco on a random Tuesday just to say I'd gone. What I found, of course, was an outstanding pizza. Like, really great. But I also met staff who've worked there for a decade or more. If you know what you're looking for, you can feel the family vibe in a restaurant, especially on a quiet weeknight. You can see them with their guard down a little, how they interact. Pizzeria Bianco and Chris's white tablecloth restaurant, Trotto, where I ate after we talked, pulse with that sense of family. I didn't think I'd get to talk to Chris. He's got 4 restaurants in Phoenix, and it turns out another one on the way this spring in Los Angeles that I hope I'm still out here for when it opens. He has 3 young kids, and he, like every other restaurant owner out there, is still battling the effects of a stubborn pandemic that just won't go away, no matter how much we all pretend it has. And he's famous as fuck. People use superlatives like legend and icon when they talk about him, but Chris doesn't go in for that sort of thing. He's pretty egoless, a bit of a philosopher chef who embraces easy humility. The conversation you'll hear in a few minutes is a bit of a high watermark for this fledgling little podcast, but not because of Chris's notoriety. He offers himself up without guile or pretense, and we get into some of the territory I'm always hoping my guests will volunteer. He's forthright and thoughtful, and more than anything, he's exactly what he seems. A hardworking guy from the Bronx with a big heart and a generous sensibility. Our conversation is coming up. Right now, I want to do something a little different, and that is to shout out a new podcast just out the last few weeks from the Whetstone Radio Collective called Setting the Table with Deb Freeman. Deb is a writer and historian of Black foodways in the U.S., and I've become such a fan of her work over the last 3 episodes that I wanted to share a little taste of it with you. The following is an excerpt from the 3rd episode, out this week, which explores the welcome resurgence of Black farmers in this country.
Welcome to Setting the Table, a podcast about Black cuisine and foodways. I'm Deb Freeman. I'm a writer that focuses on African-American foodways and the impact those foodways have on how we cook and eat today. Our first stop is a farm located in the hills of Hayward, California, across the bay from San Francisco and 20 miles south of Oakland.
My name is Ashley Johnson Geis, and I'm the founder and farmer of a small-scale farm called Brown Girl Farms.
During the early days of the COVID-19 lockdown, people coped in different ways. Pretty much everyone was either baking sourdough bread or taking up a hobby like scrapbooking or something like that. But Ashley spent the lockdown planting the seeds, no pun intended, that would become Brown Girl Farms.
At that point in my life, I was at a transition. I had just transitioned out of a role that I was holding in farm education, working with youth. And it was literally like a week before the pandemic hit. Of course, I had no clue that, you know, the pandemic was going to hit. And then we all found ourselves in quarantine. And at that time, my wife and I, we were living in Berkeley in a small condo. And really at that time is when Brown Girl Farms was first formed, out of a response that I had to seeing folks going into quarantine and all of a sudden having time on their hands to look at their space differently, growing spaces or maybe like pots that were in a corner or a balcony or a patch of grass outside of their house. And people were wanting to garden. They were wanting plant starts and seeds and produce and flower bouquets. And with my background being in farm and garden education, I was like, well, I have the skills to do this. And I was missing, you know, my community. And so I literally started out with like balcony pots and like a little greenhouse on our patio. And I started propagating plant starts and hand painting seed packets and growing a little bit of produce and making like produce packs that I would load up my SUV and do contactless deliveries to people. And that was Brown Girl Farms initially. Before there was even the physical farm here, the community was present. And through being able to provide these things to folks, really gathered around us. And they were like, what is Brown Girl Farms? You know, what are you doing? And then they would hear, oh, you don't actually have a farm. You know, where are you growing everything? And I was like, you know, we're right on our patio, you know.
Confident in her mission, Ashley and her wife decided it was time to take their home project to the next level.
And then my wife and I, we knew we wanted to look for some land and a home to start our family. And I also like to be transparent in saying finding a home in the Bay Area that's connected to land, we are privileged in that we have some family inheritance and support. And we knew we wanted to honor our family, honor our ancestors in this way by finding land. And so it was a relatively quick process in the grand scheme. It took about 4 months or so. You know, so all along to our community, we're on Instagram. And our community is seeing this process, and they are seeing us go from the condo to looking for land to finding the home here in Hayward. And at the end of those, you know, couple of months, we were convinced that we were going to have to move out of the area, you know, to somewhere like Sacramento or Sebastopol. And my wife literally found, we're in unincorporated Hayward, so she found a listing for the home and farm that we're here at now, living at. The previous owner lived here for 35 years. He mainly had an apple orchard, so he had apple trees, and he told us he had sheep. But for the most part, it was a blank slate, and it was almost like it was set up for Brown Girl Farms to come in. And so we wrote him a letter when we were putting an offer in, and we explained how we wanted to transform the home and the land. And at the end of the day, he selected us, and we were able to purchase the property.
In building her own farm, Ashley decided to intentionally grow African-American heritage crops, including collard greens, black-eyed peas, and sweet potatoes. And I asked her why.
I think that visibility to say our foods matter, to really be able to celebrate our food. Our histories are so deeply connected and intertwined with these crops. Being able to be proud as a farmer with these crops, also educate our communities, you know, hey, this collard greens that you're looking at on your plate, let me show you the seed, or let me talk to you about how there's Black-owned seed companies and they're saving these seeds. Did you know you could save the seed from a collard green, or you can also take a cutting, you know, of these tree collards? So I'm saying collard greens a lot because that is definitely one of our main staple crops here on the farm. Collard greens are so important. Going back to my grandmother, when she would be in the kitchen showing me how to strip collard greens and having the paring knife and wielding it, and I would just be like, I want to be like you one day. To now have her on the farm tending to the same greens that I at one point saw her in the kitchen stripping and washing and preparing, and now we're going all the way back to the beginning of when it starts from a seed.
She's not only proud of the heritage crops that she grows, but also in her identity as a Black female queer farmer.
First and foremost, the representation. Just my physical being presence in our farm or out interfacing with the community. It says, I exist. I'm here. I am your farmer. Farmers look like me. I'm a farmer that matters. I can do it because so much of the time, being a Black female queer farmer, all those intersectionalities, when people are interfacing with me, there's this element of surprise. And all of these steps that people go through, or that I have to go through around people interfacing with me, you know, and trying to grapple with, you know, you are a farmer. Well, first and foremost, they see that I'm Black. And then I'm a woman. And then the more hidden identities, well, I'm also queer and here's my wife and we're in an interracial marriage, you know? There's that element of shock and surprise. And so for me, being visible in that way is to also show other Black queer farmers, you matter and you deserve to be right here.
Setting the Table with Deb Freeman is available wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you like what I've been doing here, you're going to love her show. Chris Bianco started out in the back of a grocery store in 1988 and spent 20 straight years making every single pizza he ever sold. Despite all the laurels, Chris remains a canny Bronx guy whose priorities begin and end with his family and the people he works with. I hope you enjoy our conversation, and if you like what you hear, please, please, please leave a rating and a review wherever you're listening. If you're new here, please follow and subscribe so you can hear all the great guests I've got coming up.
That's all right.
I'm crazy.
So I got about an hour. We can
perfect.
Okay?
That's perfect.
Okay.
That's however long you got. Okay. That's how long I got.
All right. Yeah, 45 to an hour, but we'll get right at it. We'll get right at it. I'm in.
You dialed right in.
Yeah, we'll jump right into it.
It's nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you.
Where are we? What is this room?
This is a little place called Bar Bianco. It's our kind of bar, waiting room. I mean, during COVID, I mean, we shut it down. Basically, we just use it, open on the weekends and, for some private events that we do, but COVID changed everything. So it's just a fucking nightmare on that.
Yeah, COVID changed everything. COVID changed my whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little about you, man. What do you got going on?
I have worked in hospitality for about 25 years since I was 15 years old.
And, Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you know how it goes. I think you know something about it. I'm getting weird feedback. Worked in hospitality that long and kind of got out of the restaurant, like inside restaurants, in like 2017 and started running food tour companies in Austin, Texas. And
is that where you are? Is that where you live?
Well, I used to. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But you're here now.
Well, I'm on the road now.
Oh, that's it. You're on the road full
yeah,
time.
Yeah. My address is a camper right now. It's parked in, the Superstition Mountains. And it does not suck. Just got there last night. I was in Tucson up until then for the last week and a half, but I've just been moving since July. Mm-hmm. The tour companies stopped working. You can't put people on buses and take them to restaurants in COVID. Mm-hmm. And that had been going really well and then done.
Yeah.
Same time my home life fell apart, just everything fell apart. And I said, you know, I'm going to do this thing. I've been a writer my whole life. The whole time I've been in hospitality, I've been like freelance writing, about food and wine, cocktail stuff. So I decided I'd do this and it's working out. It's pretty good. But I get to talk to, you know, the cool thing is like I just have made so many friends since I started. Like I get to talk to people that, you know, we all do the same thing. And I'm really interested to know about how COVID has affected your life, affected your business. I want to know your story. You know, but it's just a conversation. I just like talking.
All right, let's go.
Let's go. So you got sick, right?
Everybody got sick in our world right now. I mean, I'm vaxxed, boosted.
Same.
But I did end up getting it. And my wife got it. You know, she just, it was just like, you know, kind of like a back cold, really. And for me as well.
Yeah, good.
And I'm thankful to the, you know, the boost. I mean, that's the kind of the, I think the crazy thing or the crazy argument, which is, you can still get it if you're vaxxed. Well, yeah, you can fucking get it, but you might not die. So that's helpful. If like 83% of the people to 90%, I think, of the people that are dying, and unfortunately, I know of more than I'd like to than anyone would.
Oh, really?
You know, they didn't come out of this thing, and I think
I'm sorry.
Obviously people with comorbidities, and everyone's there's a lot of those going around, and yeah. I think, you know, people say, well, they were old and they could go anyway, and well, they could, but I tell you, you know, 5 more minutes with, you know, someone you love is an eternity sometimes.
Right.
So, and I think that those are the things. I mean, the realities are, you know, for a lot of us, we, you know, we're getting this to not kill your grandma.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Not necessarily. I'm worried about my physical self. I think
right.
It's like, you know, and it's hard to take people seriously when they're, you know, fucking banging down a Big Mac, not knowing where the food comes from, with not some secret sauce and not knowing, you know, whatever. And they need more diligence on the vaccine. So.
It's really frustrating.
So it's just, yeah, that's without, there's no judgment. I mean, I don't have any judgment on it, I guess.
I do.
I guess it just helped me understand, and I don't understand, so maybe it's me.
I don't think it's you. I don't know. You say no judgment, and I think that's great. But
Well, it's not about that. It's not that I don't have judgment or not. I'm saying is, I just never put myself in position for that. I have my opinion, and I think yeah. my opinion is I think when you get as old as me, maybe I think that, not that you don't have, I think maybe judgment isn't the right word. I have beliefs that I hold.
Yeah.
And but I also live in a community, a global community that I do.
But that's the thing, is if you're living in a community of people, especially in restaurants, right? Like, that's all we do, is we make family with the people that we work with, because we're here, you know, 20 hours a day sometimes.
Right.
And you gotta look out for each other. And you have that sort of ingrained in you. And I think that there are a lot of people that don't have that empathy bone these days, or at least
yeah, in a show. Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of that going around, for
right.
sure.
Right.
But there's... Okay, hold on 1 second.
Yeah, take time.
Yeah. Brother James, I just got a quick thing. You good? You need anything?
No, I've got a party here tonight.
I know. No, we'll be late, like 45 minutes. Yeah, we'll be quick. All right, brother. We'll see you in a minute. I think that's, you know, it's we're in the, you know, I'm in the relationship business, is what I always say
right.
many times. You know, we're in the relationship with our, you know, our neighbors, our team, our customers, our you know, people that, our farmers, the people bring our food, you know, all those things. And I think when any of those relationships, you know, are neglected, mm-hmm. And don't serve their intention or opportunity, then I think it leaves much mayhem to ensue, for sure. So. Yeah, I don't know. I'm exhausted with it, and I think a lot of people are, you know, too. As you see, you know, superpowers teetering on maybe another world war, and the pandemic, you know, might never go away, and you know, it was something that. I would love to say, I saw things coming, or I even understood what a pandemic was, to be honest with you. You know,
right, well,
I knew what an epidemic was, I thought, and you know, we read about, you know, potato famines and all the other challenges that throughout the world that have knocked us out of. Just our normal,
sure.
normal ways of life.
I don't think anybody knew. I mean, yeah. How do you know? This has never happened in anybody's lifetime. So.
And I'm really, afraid isn't the right word. I guess I think it's just more of the reality set in. Like, I don't believe it's ever coming back in that way. I just don't believe it. Like, I don't think we were already, like, from a hospitality business, we were already a business on life support, in a way of yeah. systems of, you know, the trickle down effect, and really never trickled down to the hospitality industry.
Right.
You know, the kind of the margin of people that make a lot of money aren't the people that are really taking care of their teams and, mm-hmm. you know, paying great wages and hopefully, you know, buying great food from great sources.
Mm-hmm.
So finding just ways to be, to exist in this world has been.
Well, what have you found? I mean, in your experience, I mean, you have five spots in town?
Four
in town?
Yeah.
And all of them are still around?
They're around. It will cost, though. It will cost.
Right.
You know, like, I've been in business since 1988.
Right.
You know, and you know, you're lucky if you have a life savings to put away. And now you look at your life savings that made what you have survive.
Mm.
And now the cupboard's bare. So I'm blessed that I had something for a rainy day, but I didn't know it was a two year old tsunami.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And that's just, again, it's not just, you know, obviously not speaking from an island. I mean, there's
right.
a lot of villagers all over, and every village affected. But I'm also, in a way, I think that, you know, not starting with much of anything except an idea 30-something years ago, I'm pretty decent at being on the swivel.
Mm.
Of adapting to, you know, whatever moment that we find ourselves in.
So you came out here from New York, right, in the 80s? With just what? With, like, what got you here?
I just was looking to be anywhere but where I was. I think a lot of times...
I know about that.
A lot of times, you know, early 20s, whatever, I just wanted to, you know, I didn't travel much. I wanted to see other parts of the world, you know, and like for me, like Arizona was as far away as I could ever imagine anywhere being, you know. California was a little bit more obvious, I guess, in a way.
Sure.
Break for 1 second.
Sure, take your time.
Jorge, I'm sorry, I was in a meeting, but I heard you're sick. Okay. Okay, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out from there. Okay, we just take care of yourself and just let me know what's going on, and we'll go from there, you know? And all right, buddy, I'm sorry you're not feeling good. Well, it's I know, but just fucking part of our existence right now, you know? Every day it's just another thing to deal with, and I just want you to be okay. Okay. All right. We'll figure it out. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Bye.
How many calls like that you take?
I take more than a few.
Yeah, I bet.
You know? So, yeah. I mean, those are the realities, you know, that, you know, if someone's been exposed, they get a call. They get a call. They need to go get a test.
Right.
You know, if they're positive, they need to obviously, you know, be you know, minimum 5 days, and it needs to be, obviously, they need to be symptom free, and you know, the realities of this business were, yeah, we used to work through the sniffles.
Sure, right.
Not that that was right, but, or wrong. I mean, it was just part of what we did. I mean, if
right.
you said, I feel a little bit off today, or my head hurts, so, well, you take a couple Advil and you go to work. And,
right.
And now, just when you have, like, we don't have the luxury of a deep bench, you
right.
know, like, we don't have the luxury in our industry of, like, oh, we'll just call our one of our many people just waiting to jump in.
Right. And it's like you said, too, where it's like, okay, it's the sniffles, but, you know, could the sniffles, you know, where it might not affect you that bad, could kill somebody else or somebody else's
so, yeah,
grandma
just tell
or whatever.
Stay home and we'll figure it out until
right.
you figure it out.
Right. I think that, but I think, I'm not sure about this, but I get the impression that you're the exception to the rule when you're with your take on that. I think that there are a lot of people who are just like, fuck it, come in.
Again, I'm not here to, I mean, like I said, I didn't mean to, like, you just bring up the judgment part. It's like, I think it's my exhaustion.
Yeah.
Where if I really worried about like other shit and other people and other, I was always more like, even on the restaurant side of things, you know, like I didn't ever worry about what anybody was doing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I just worried about what we could do and we could control. And if I went somewhere and it was special, I just enjoyed it. I didn't wish them anything but the best of luck.
Of course.
And, You know, I have so many friends in our industry, and I will say I leaned on them a lot during this time, and maybe hopefully they found a place to lean, you know, with me. And I just it's just been, you know, you can put every word on your mood board that you want, unprecedented, fucking whatever. But I think it'll fall short of really the realities of this
whole thing.
I
don't think you want to see my mood board, man. I've been talking to some of your friends, I talked to Silvana a while ago. She's excellent people. She's one of my new favorite people. And she was talking about how when all the shit went down and, you know, she had a walk-in full of food ready for spring training crowds to come through and didn't know what to do with it. She just set up her own grocery store for her community. And then suddenly you're calling her and Charlene is calling her and y'all are coming down and putting into that effort. And like, that's a big deal.
Well, I think you just do what you can, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're also, we're so, I don't know if it's easily overwhelmed, but we have so much to be overwhelmed by. Just clicking on the news or sticking our head out the window or picking up the phone.
Right.
If you could pull up your head over the covers and just have it all go away, you know, that'd be something else.
But that's the thing that we're in the business to do too, is to take that away from people for 45 minutes or an hour.
Well, I think, you know, in hospitality, again, right, putting that word up on our little virtual new mood board, is the study of that, where we're like, you know, feeding people, like, going to St. Vincent de Paul and seeing people are literally starving and,
sure,
and sick and hurting and feeding them is not necessarily hospitality, you know. It's a responsibility that we have, you know. Where you know, if you go down to like, I was down at an event on Monday and at St. Vincent de Paul, and with, you know, a great organization that does amazing things for people that, Phoenix doesn't have as a profound, homeless, I would say, situation, but it's profound enough where it's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you really see when you interface with people that are in those positions. These aren't people that are like, oh man, if they just had a job, they're just down their luck. Mm-hmm. You know, in my opinion, like, you know, these are people facing incredible, like, mental challenges, drug challenges.
Right.
The challenge that they have, there's no place to go.
Right.
With those things. So just, if we had more jobs, if we had, you know, we had just more whatever. And it's just like, like I said, I don't have the answers to that. I'm not saying it's a simple solution.
Right.
You know, but I think going back to just doing what you can, just doing what you can, and nothing does not seem to be a path forward of good conscience.
Right.
So, you know, and there's people that do that every day. I mean, you know, I do it when I can, and help as much as I can, which is never enough. And in the moment, I feel good about doing something positive, but it's just a spit in the ocean. You know, it's just
But the thing is that you bring when you do stuff like that, you bring an energy and a karma to the world, to the people that you talk to. I don't know. I've recently learned quite a bit about how being of service can be so healing, not just to you, but to the immediate world around you. And that's the only thing you have any control over anyway.
Well, I think making time to interface with humanity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sitting here with you today. I don't fucking know you from nothing.
Yeah.
You reached out on Instagram. You seem like a nice guy. And you know what? I don't give a shit if you're sponsored by a big company, have a gazillion followers, you might have two. I don't give a shit. If we can, if through this dialogue, you know, I'm able to figure something out maybe that I didn't know, or maybe you were.
Right.
And I think those things, I've been in elevators on the ride up to perceive somewhere.
Right.
that I only learned something because I got off the wrong floor, you know?
Right.
And when I got to where I was going, it wasn't what I expected.
No such thing as a mistake.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, brother. There's a couple, I would say. But it's more often than not, I believe that there's an opportunity in our mistakes.
Yeah, there
and,
it is.
You know, there's always room for discernment.
There it is.
You know, even on our best of days, there's room for, you know, when people say, that's their, again, their world. But, you know, I don't wake up and go, man, I got to look back at my 59 years on earth and say, man, I really live with no regrets. I have a lot of regretful decisions that I made that were in that moment, the best with the best, you know, diligence that I could do on that decision. But no, again, if we're not knowing what we know now, if we're not, you know, right. learning from our past, you know, we are kind of doomed to repeat.
But when it comes to those regrets and that regretful,
not,
I don't know.
Not a ton of them.
Everybody has them, you know? And like, I think I've got my share. And one of the things I'm trying to learn is that, you know, of those mistakes or of those things that I maybe blamed other people for, that there's a lot of my own juju in that recipe as well. Like, and that helps me actually let go of those things, saying, oh, I don't really need to carry this anger around, or I don't need to carry the regret around because I understand it better now. Have you found that?
I don't know if I've really taken the time to look at it in that way. Just think that, you know, going back to the hospitality
right.
industry, let's just say, I was sold as a role to disarm and employ, you know, employ your intention, employ whatever it is, if it's just a pizza or a bowl of pasta or whatever. You know, some people need, after that disarmament, after they, like, they're, you know, they can believe they had a park and they had, you know, so far away, or they had a weight, or they had this. And when you get past that, I think, you know, world's hustle and bustle and, you know, perception, I always relish the opportunity, at least to do all we can to find the greatest and highest good for that moment, you know, like whatever it is or not, you know. I'm definitely not for everybody, and probably vice versa. But I go in with the idea of I want to make sure that I find a coexistence with whoever I'm sitting across the table from, and then from there, you know, it's like the restaurant that has the same pitch. Hey, welcome to whatever. You know, we got this in our special one. And I think you need different, you know, you need a different, you know, we should read tables, you know, and read the news and read statistics. And I think those things help us, you know, I say this in probably in every interview I've ever done, but definitely at least, if not once a day, a couple times a week, that I say my life changed. You know, I went from what the fuck to help me understand. And, you know, like, you know, you feel like an idiot when you're like, God damn it, I asked this room to be set, you know, at 3 o'clock, it's so important, I had whatever, so-and-so's coming, and then you find out the truck on the way with your team was in a rollover accident, you know, and you feel like an idiot, and rightfully so, instead of saying, God, I'm going to find out why I know those guys would not just blow this off. I'm going to find out what it is, and you'll save yourself, you know, that level kind of... you know, red level kind of nuclear response.
Not good for your health.
And maybe at first you're looking to discern, provide empathy where needed.
Right.
And I think those things are not just hospitality. They're, I mean, my wife and my three kids are my whole life, you know. And I think when I say that, I mean, they're my foundation. You know, they give me the they get me out of my own head. They get me a reason to be accountable if I didn't have enough already. I think
before I was gonna say, family. four restaurants in town. Accountability is a thing.
Well, yeah, and you know, and then your people, all your extended family. I think right. We can use those words.
I think so too.
We can use the emojis and the heart emojis, but I mean, but I think to attempt to, I would say a lot of times, you know, love is that, you know, word to explain the inexplicable. You know, like it's a word that doesn't even make any sense. Mm. Explain how you feel that, you know, that kind of feeling in your stomach where. Even now, it's hard to maybe understand love from infatuation or addiction or whatever the fuck it is,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it, a lot of times, it takes a lifetime to know what to do with the things that you're going through.
Yeah.
And feeling. So,
yeah, words are...
good luck sifting through all this stuff. I don't know.
No, this it's is, just, I mean, it's, this it's, is what I'm after. I mean, like, love is a big word, and it's one of those words that I think, you're right, is insufficient to a lot of the occasions where it's used. You know, they say the Inuit have 25 words for snow, right? And, you know, we ought to
sounds about right, yeah.
probably have 25.
Slush.
Yeah, right. And
freezer, right?
And they all mean something different, and they all mean something, you know, I can say, you know, I love my mom, and I can say I love my dog, and that means two really different things.
Yeah, that is point on right there. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, appropriation for right. anything, temperature when you're cooking.
Right.
How big a you know a big your soup bowl is right. you know whatever it is you know we're looking to my language I say it can be inappropriate at times you know for my you know my young kids and or kids probably or maybe even people I'll be honest with you.
Or just but, humans in
but
general
just humans in general but sometimes it's all I have
right
to convey whatever place that I'm in at that moment
right
and you know one day I hope to broaden my arsenal of English language.
I think you're doing just fine. When do you think that shift happened in you between what the fuck?
You know, I probably was 30.
Okay.
You know, which is many moons ago now, but well, I was probably about 30 before I really figured that out. Because I thought with responsibility, when I was younger, I thought responsibility demanded an air of something. I don't even know what it was about when you walk into a room or when a, you know, I don't know. I was never I never really believed in the old school mentality of breaking someone down and rebuilding them. I wanted to kind of build from where you were,
right.
you know? So I want to find out where you are, what's important to you. So it was confusing anyway. A lot of times, like with me, like, you know, a lot of chefs, when I was younger, that I worked for, you know, they break you down in a way right, of like right. how insignificant you are. You know, only I can teach you how hard this business is, how, you know, how long the hours are. And all of a sudden you're building yourself up for this, you know, I mean, you know, you read Kitchen Confidential for the first time, Bourdain's right. book. And right. I think it's you know, unmistakably familiar to too many people,
right.
like of you know, just that and that juxtaposition of, you know, Vivaldi's playing in the dining room, and you know, the chef's on acid doing whatever with you know, some type of you know, kind of with a wet floor doing some type of mosh pit, while you know and. yeah, I mean, again, just
and we've been there.
Yeah,
I've just, seen it.
Well, yeah, I've heard about these things. I haven't seen. I've heard the rumors, but I think knowing that or understanding that.
Yeah.
I never think just because I burnt my fingers that you need to burn your fingers.
Right.
And a lot of I think it's changing now, but I think a lot of people when I was growing up more about well you're gonna have to figure it out and you're gonna have to go through. Now I think that. I worry about my kids, you know, now that, you know, it's not that they have an opulent lifestyle by any means, but I worry about, you know, I think understanding that part of the weight of struggle is definitely something you want to find a balance to,
mm-hmm.
where there's a, you know, there's a value of hopefully most everything and how we get things and where food comes from and, you know, how precious rain is. And,
how old are your kids?
How old are they?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a late start and get married. I've been married 9 of the best years of my life.
Congratulations.
Now. And first and last time, for sure. But I have Nina, my older one, to be she'll be 8 in April. Depending on when this comes out, she might already be 8. And then my Leo, my boy, named after my dad. He's 6. And then the surprise one, which is Eva, my little one. She's 4 years old, and she's I tell, you know, rest of them I love them all the same, but you know, she's definitely my favorite. You know, you know, that's, and that should, we should recognize that. You know, I think we can
be
like
honest.
Things differently.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, love is that, you know, with your kids especially, there's an unconditional aspect to it. With your wife, you know, your partner, you've chosen elements of a personality that coexist with yours. But with your kids, you're like, dude, man, you got the bad shake of the DNA. It's my fault, but I hope you get out of that. Hope you get out of that.
Good luck with all that.
Yeah, get out of that that little phase you're going through there. But, it's.
So you got young kids.
I do. I have young kids. It keeps me.
How's that feel?
You know what? I would say it's one place where my my. I think conveniently I was in some type of frozen time work from work, you know. Sure. I just worked for, you know, maybe 25 years straight in a restaurant, never left. Almost in a, like, my whole relationships were inside the restaurant. Yeah. They were the restaurant. That was my, so I think conveniently my immaturity has probably served me well, where even with my kids, a lot of times I'm like, listen, dude, I was like fucking 4 like 2 seconds ago in the big picture of things.
Yeah.
You know, the eyes I'm looking through, if I don't look in the mirror,
yeah,
I don't know if I have much more wisdom than like 19.
That's fine. That's fair.
You know, I think
most maybe, people don't.
You know, I think we're pretty much, you know, maybe we've learned to accept things differently or put them in some perspective, but it's not like I had this big, you know, other than the big help me understand thing, we were pretty much who we were, I think, at that point.
I might take you to task on your wisdom.
We'll see. It's a work in progress.
Well, it is. That's wisdom right there.
Well, it is. I always say I'm
people
as...
know, if you don't know what you don't know, if you know what you don't know, then that's
some
wisdom.
I'm more of a how you see me kind of guy than me tell you who I am.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people are... believe they're misunderstood, maybe more than like, you know, if no one shows up at your birthday party, maybe it's not traffic or vice versa, you know.
Yeah, it's what are that? I have a friend who calls it the asshole rule. If you meet 3 assholes in a day, it might be you that's the asshole.
That's a good one. I've heard that one. I'm gonna have to start.
There you go. That was why you sat down with me. That one right there.
There you go.
I give it to you.
There you go. All right.
Your middle kid's named after your dad.
Yeah.
And you and your family, I did a little reading before I got here. It seems like you were really close with your family coming up and stayed with them. And
I was extremely close, and I still am close.
Yeah.
Maybe closer, you know, in a weird way. And I think those are things that give me a lot of peace as I get older.
Yeah.
My dad just passed away about a month ago.
Oh my God!
And I'm 94. Sorry. No, it's he had an incredibly blessed life. 94, a lot of art that he's done is around restaurants. And
oh, he's a painter.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. Just an amazing painter, even better man, better father. But living long enough to see him as a man versus my dad was probably the greatest blessing of my life. You know, and I think a lot of times that we see people in this, like, you know, as we're 17 and, you know, we're slamming the back door because whatever the fuck, thought our life would change differently, whatever it is, when they are rebellious, even how maybe hopefully minuscule that they are. Ultimately, if we hang around long enough, I think then you see, you know, the struggle of really what it takes to bring things to the table, you know, a family, to provide on that, and, you know, to love as intended, I think. My parents were married 62 years, I think. 62. This would have been their, 63rd. But
is your mom still around?
Yeah, she is. She's 82, young chick. I just saw her today. I had a coffee with her this morning. And
that's great.
And she lives just a few blocks, a few blocks away. And I see the last, 25 years ago, they moved out from New York. My brother, Marco, works with me.
He's a baker, right?
Yeah, he's our head baker. And just all around, he's just a great brother and better man.
Older or younger?
He's my older brother, which would be, I would say, impossible for me. I think if I was him, to work for your younger brother, or he doesn't work for him. I don't mean to say it like that, but I guess for lack of a better word, I'm kind of the boss, and I think with your family, you're harder on them initially than anybody else, and so I always try to reel that back a little bit as much as I can, because I know him. He's an incredible baker. He's a part of this as much as I am.
That's amazing.
And he came out about 5 years after we got started, and I suckered him into work with me. And it's been great. A lot of people don't like to work with their friends or family, and I'm all for it. I like to know what I got in that way, and I think that I don't want to just have this kind of you find out who your friends are pretty quick when business goes a certain way or a deal doesn't turn out the way you want. How you divvy up, the furniture or whatever the fuck it is that you're gives a shit about. And that's how I always see doing business with my friends or family, which is those are the people I want to do business with. I feel the responsibility of doing all I can so we can, I never care. Like I said, I used to care about money. I care about it now because I think we get to a life where we want to be philanthropic. We want to share things. We want to help people have their life security as well. I'm going to, looking at 60 in the not too distant future. A lot of my guys that are working next door right now have been with me 30 plus years. Like, what's our exit strategy? What's our retirement that we never thought we'd even live to see or had to worry about? Because, we live on such a kind of, you live in this kind of, punk rock and roll, I don't even know what kind of lifestyle when it starts out.
Right.
It's all about, how many scars you got, how late you worked, how many covers. And I think finding that balance in our life right now is a chance for hospitality in a way to reinvent itself, but to do that, I think people have to, really understand what food costs.
Well, you're talking about just to go back to your family a little bit. I mean, working with your family takes trust. And I think that the people that we're most easily able to trust in some circumstances are our family, because of that, unconditionality and the sort of permanence of your relationship and all of that. But I think also on the flip side, it's really easy to mistrust people that close because you know everything about them.
Yeah, right? that can be a challenge as well. Yeah. But I think, at the end of the day, it's when you see people in this, no one gets out alive, brother, of this game that we're in right now.
Right.
And understanding that, and as we're, 9 years old, 11, and immortal, jumping off, cliffs at the pond or whatever, wherever we are, not knowing what's in the water below us.
Right.
And as we get older, I think, you find the worth in the things that are that you're looking at as you transition in this world. Like if caviar is worth this because man made a, was tired of throwing out, fish roe, and feeding other fish with it, or they were, tired of, saying, God, those things we dig up, in the fall, those nuggets that taste funky, those truffles, let's just charge a shitload for them. And I dig them. They're great. But I'm just saying that those are matte diamonds. They're just as a glass. Why are they so? We made them precious and maybe rightfully so.
Right.
Or not. But I'm saying we've attached you know,
a value
to that. Yeah. So I think it's with that same sense of empowerment that we have the ability to attach the values to the things that are in our life that we want. That if we say fuck truffles or fuck caviar, not that I eat those things, I want to happen, but I want, you know, I like cremini mushrooms, you know, that's your world. Because I eat them with the person I love every Thursday night, and that's what she makes, and she makes them, whatever. I mean, whatever that.
But that's a good reason.
You know, but I think finding the totality of why.
Yeah.
But maybe you love truffles because, you know, your grandfather took your truffle hunting.
Right.
And you grew up in Piedmont,
you
and it became this ritual.
Right, yeah.
But I'm saying, I think, you know, man, just like he does with religion, just like we do with anything of good intention, we'll find a way to fuck it up. You know, we'll find a way to like wolves, you know, in a chicken coop, you know, to find a way to prey on the vulnerable, you know. And I think those are things that, you know, whatever, regardless of our spirituality, I think that's a short game.
I'm in recovery for alcoholism. And one of the things that we say often is that, you've spent your life judging yourself by your intentions while the rest of the world has judged you by your actions. And I always, whenever I think about intentions now, that's what I think about, where it's like, intentions are in here, not out here.
Yeah.
Nobody can see your fucking intentions.
Yeah, if you're going to spend your day saying, that's not what I meant.
Right.
Well, maybe you need a little reboot
on the
delivery. And I think that thing is like, I mean, we could talk for too longer than I'd like to admit about that whole thing, you know, of the delivery.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather tell me to go fuck myself than give me the face.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, for sure.
Because at least you know where you stand.
For sure.
You know, the eye roll back and, you know, when the head roll back or the exhausted, you know, whatever, is something that, like, you know, is confusing at best. And,
sure.
I think it's the time that we, like, I would say, like, you know, do we think about the time that we text somebody that we work with, or we like, hey, tomorrow I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and early. Okay, great. And, oh, okay, have a good night. And that's it.
Yeah.
And then all night you're staying up saying, fuck, I wonder, are they sick? Are they dying? Are they leaving? Are they staying? What's going on? Instead of saying, like, I'm always trying to say, like, well, I want to make sure I don't text you on your day off. I want, unless you got the last bucket of water and I'm on fire, you know? And I want to, or unless it's something, I have some good news for you or something.
Something really important.
And I want to make sure that I catch you in a moment that you can receive it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, you look at something like a vaccine.
Sure.
If we were incapable as we are now to distribute it, that's a challenge. Or people aren't willing to receive it. It's doing us no good. No good at all.
Right.
So I think those things, like, again, you go back to, oh, that's not my intention. Well, when you talk about intention, I think sometimes those things are just self-soothing.
Totally.
You know, and those were like, well, it's not what I meant, you know. And then we're like backtracking because, no, like I said, nobody did show up at that birthday party.
Right.
And like, oh, I didn't mean when I told nobody, like, don't fucking come unless you, whatever, I don't know.
And I also find 9 times out of 10 when I'm saying to somebody, that's not what I meant, I'm not being particularly honest with them or myself either, because what I meant is probably exactly how they took it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe so. I will say for myself, I find some of my text messages long-winded because I know that we are in a world that's easily misunderstood.
Sure.
So I want to make sure that I follow up, sometimes even preemptively, and that could be a whole nother thing.
Right.
Because you're so unsure of, like, I want to make sure, I know this might sound that way, but just to ensure you it's not, and then people are already fucking, you already lost them anyway.
Right.
No one really gives a shit. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff, to, I guess.
You know, you got me, it's funny, you were talking about your dad and 94, and your kids, you got me thinking about my dad, because my dad was 55 when I was born. One and only marriage, right? They stayed together all the way through. He died when he was 90, which was 7 years ago.
Huh.
So it's this weird situation where I'm a little bit in the position of your
kids.
So you
got to hang a little bit.
Got to hang a little bit. Unfortunately, he ended up with dementia the last 10 years of his life. And so there was maybe a 3 or 4 year window when I was old enough to be my own person and he was still sort of around and with it but you know, one of the kindest human beings on the planet. But at the same time, like, it's interesting that you're in this position where you just had this loss of your dad. I always say with my dad, he didn't die, he crossed the finish line.
Yeah, that's right, man. Especially right now, like, you know, in this world right now, it's like, dude, you have all the answers, we're just left with all the questions.
Right.
And, and I think the other thing, 94, 90, 10 years of dementia, there's never enough time.
Never.
It doesn't matter. And there's no perfection. Like, you know, even when I was, you know, if I got married at 22 and had kids at 23 and had a life where I could, you know, coach Little League every night because I worked at the 9-to-5 job, it wasn't my path.
Right.
Like, you know, it wasn't the hand that, even if it was solitaire, it wasn't the hand that I was dealt.
Right.
And I think that I'm doing the best that I can, making the most of the opportunity that I've been blessed with. So, I got to, you know, be with my dad when he passed.
That's a blessing.
And it was amazing. It was actually fucking amazing. I think we're so connected to skin and bone anyway. It's, you know, in our physical everything.
Yeah.
Appearance, attributes, how we discard the elders in our community anyway for their lack of perceived ability to truly bring worth to a community or to a conversation. And my dad, to the, you know, probably to a week before he passed, that all the wisdom that I can handle and then some, and also seeing that separation of spirit and physicality, I think was helpful. As you know, like, even with some of my friends now, like, you know, now you talk about what aches, you know, more than what you know, bakes, I guess. I don't know what, but it's part of that looking beyond that, like, in that what we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think metaphorically, that's kind of been helpful for me.
How so?
In a way of just because I can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah.
Or I can even begin to understand it.
Yeah.
So I can do the best with what I can understand and what I can see. And if I see you and you need a ride, well, I'm going to pick you up, you know, hopefully. Unless you're hitching and your, you know, mouth is foaming out or whatever. I don't know. I
might
hopefully phone the authorities that you need some help, I hope. I don't know if that came off good, but whatever.
But it's knowing who you can help and who you can't.
Yeah. So, you know, again, think, are you capable? You know, sometimes
what are you able to do?
You know, sometimes you look at how, I remember watching like EMTs walk incredibly slow sometimes in an emergency. And I remember talking to one of them one time about just like the last thing you want to do is trip and make people nervous. And I think that's such a wise, you know, probably from experience, reality. And I think as we elevate situations, you know, when you see them come in and being calm, and I think if you're watching somebody, you know, save your loved one or attempt, you're going, you know, hurry and hurry, and they're like moving incredibly deliberately, you know, with precision and all their whatever. They're going to make sure that they, whatever it's the CC or the how they pick someone up or don't or whatever. And I think it's just helpful, you know, for our own growth or ability to discern and comprehend, to be as you know, thorough as we can about what we're, you know, grateful for, pissed about, ungrateful for, whatever. You know, just dive in as deep as we can.
It's about being forthright. It's about being honest with yourself.
Yeah, that's a, you know, the honest with ourselves part is a hard one.
It is,
because we're I think we're kind of wired in a way to cut ourselves some slack, you know. And I think that comes in handy. I think we need to cut ourselves some slack, no doubt. But I think, like, just like too much of anything, it can be a detriment to our own existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding that, I think a lot of chefs, and I've said that a lot, but a lot of chefs, we spend our life attempting to put things in balance, only to find our lives are the complete opposite of that.
Right.
Like you've emptied your soul in a way, or you've emptied your whatever, your ability to kind of, you know, give anymore because you're unwilling to receive.
Right.
And it's you know, the whole dying with your boots on thing doesn't seem the best way, you know, to live this life.
No.
You know, and I'm not talking about defending our country and that. I'm just talking about I'll just keep working until I kick off.
Yeah, standing on a kitchen line, right? Yeah.
And I really thought that that was the way. You know, I didn't have another path.
Well, you used to make every single pizza that came out of your house.
I did. Until I had a little health challenge. And I was forced with some decisions that would save a lot of my own life. To boot the house of cards that I did build with no plan.
How long did you go doing that?
It was about a 20-year run of, like, not missing days and doing everything. But I still had, you know, my brother was with me and a lot of my team was still here. But I stood in front of the oven consecutively for a long, long time. But mostly, like, you know, kind of the old you'll need this more than I do kind of thing. Or this will hurt me more than it does you kind of thing. And I think that I found that it was incredibly self-serving for myself.
Okay.
Because I think innately we, you know, most of us don't want to let people down, you know, that are looking at you or looking for something. We're also, I think, we're not wired for this, but I think the world that we live in has got us set up for the shoe to drop, especially now.
Sure.
You know, we're just waiting for the, you know, for the next, what
thing? Economic implosion. Yeah, pandemic, whatever.
I mean, it just, and I think just to be able to stop one day and just say, you know, how, I guess I'll cut myself some slack, but if I didn't cut myself, I would say how negligent, you know, of building something that if I drop dead today, this cannot sustain. Because I did not delegate. I did not do the things that make things, you know, like all the things that I'm, like, I remember when I was a kid, like, being so bummed out the corner grocery store, not grocery store, but there was a, used to be candy stores back in the day, like in New York especially.
Right.
You go by a Matchbox and get a egg cream and a you know, a Baby Ruth and go about your business and the world was all right. And then seeing that close, maybe when Toys R Us opened or whatever, that really, I think, started this thing for me to, I don't say jaded, but it was like, well, I don't want to invest too much love in that thing because I know it's going away. And I think we do that with people sometimes.
Sure.
They're like, you know, unless, like, for my dad or the people that I love, sometimes skin and bone, I would say most times it gets in the way of our ability to communicate with the things that they've left for us to become useful to this time on earth. So it's, you know, going back to rebooting my life, I just had to look at, you know, the blessing of having a little bit of a challenge that made me look at my life differently, like how could I delegate? And the reality is, I think, you know, this is something I use all the time, but in a sports analogy, you got a 40-inch vertical in basketball. All of a sudden, you got to be crafty. You got to, you're a bench player. Then you got to, you know, become a coach, a scout by the team. You know, find a way to serve its greatest good. That used to be you doing this thing. And I think it's from a chef's perspective. You know, we don't have much use if people can't see you in front of a stove or an oven with a pan in your hand. And for me, it allowed me to look at where food grows, grow it. You know, we have a tomato business that we invest a lot of time in Northern California.
Oh, I'm headed that way. I'll go see it.
Well, but it's up there. Everything's in the can right now. And we're months from the field, but my partner, Rob DiNapoli, is third generation, you know, grower and packer and, you know, brought something in my life that helped me diversify which was looking at my life, where how can I make the pantry better than we found it? And so looking at organics and looking at, you know, things that I used every day, like tomatoes, and could I affect it along with people that were capable, that had land and knowledge. And I think when land and knowledge is kind of married with good intention, or the end user, from, you know, a chef married with a farmer, married with the ability to preserve or can, that's a, there's all facets of something that is now empowered to do for everyone to be able to survive. You know, for everyone to have some skin in the game, to have a purpose, to know that I don't make everything, and I never did, even when I stood in front of that oven every day.
Right.
You know, I don't make rain. You know, I don't make, you know,
right.
You know,
you're not God.
You know, and I think finding our role and adapting to our whether it's our physical restraints or mental, you know, if I would say if I did the books, we close tomorrow.
Right.
So I think finding our place, finding what we like to do, what we're capable of doing.
It's funny you say that, like, you know, you got to figure out where you
D-train. Got. D-Train.
You got to get going soon.
We got five minutes. Is that
cool.
Good?
Okay. That's fine.
5 minutes, Train. I'm all done.
Okay, sounds good.
Doing a big power interview here. Big power.
Big power.
big broadband, whatever it's called. But
I don't know what it's called either. It's probably part of my problem.
But
no, but I'm doing some math. And
we got a speaker with a clown nose on it. So I know this is important.
Right? No, I spent the money.
I know this is important. It looks good.
$10 mics.
For everyone out there wondering, it looks professional. I'll tell you right now. And yeah.
But I'm doing, you know, I'm doing a little math in my head, and you did 20 years at the oven, kind of consecutively. And then you took off from that for whatever reasons. You've been married for 9 years.
Well, I had you know, some asthma I had to deal with.
Right.
I went to London to do a couple projects there.
Oh, cool.
With Jamie Oliver. And,
oh, I love him.
And then
he's the guy who taught me how to cook.
Really?
Well, not personally, but
he's a good man.
His first book came out, and that taught me how to cook.
Yeah, I mean, just one of the best people on the planet.
I believe that.
Just
he was really nice to my dad. Met him, and he was really nice to my dad.
Yeah, he. But you know, there's you know, Brexit hit challenges there.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You know, the world's in a constant.
But you're saying, like, for chefs, it's like you have this world that you create within the four walls of your restaurant and your kitchen with all these people that you pay, and you get to tell them what to do, and you set your hours.
I say ask them what to do more than we ask
well,
them.
Well, right, but you do.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
do. I'm just saying yeah. chefs in
no,
general.
Just
you know, you create your menu, you set your prices, and it's like this is your ecosystem, and you are the god of that ecosystem. And then when you leave that world, you don't have control over anything. And you see, in, you know, like you said, people's lives outside of that world tend to not be great if you don't have that balance.
Well, unless you, like I said, unless you, like, in that time.
Yeah.
Because you know, mortality is undefeated.
Right.
You know that.
100%.
I better get a plan.
Right.
I better make a, you know, a template that's deep. You know, a deep template. And I think now my restaurants are better than ever because of the template, because I found an ability to affect them at their greatest good. And then staying out of the way, just like with our, you know, like, you know, you can love your kids all you want, but you want them to get off the couch at some point, you know, and get out in the world, and of course you come visit you as much as you can, but I think there's parts of this that are a natural progression.
You gotta let go.
And grab on, but in a new, you know,
right.
In a new part of that, a new facet of it.
Right.
Finding a new perch to see the things you need to see. So you can, you know, we're staring at the same view and the same, you know, end-to-end view. It can be, very short-sighted.
Well, I really appreciate your time today, man. This has been great.
Well, cool, man. Well, good luck on that road.
Thank you.
Hopefully it's kind, and watch out for the potholes along the way.
Right on.
All right, man. Well, God bless you, brother.
Appreciate
you. Be well.
Thanks for listening. If you're new to Road Hungry, I hope you'll go back and have a listen to some of the other great conversations I've had since starting out this past September. You can follow along with my journey on Instagram at road.hungry. And if you're so inclined to support this project, you can make donations through Venmo at the website roadhungry.com.
Please leave a rating and review wherever you're listening. That's the best way to help me get this podcast out into the wider world. I'm headed to Florida next week for some time off the road, but I'll be back in April with more great conversations from the great wide expanse of this country. Until then, I'll see you out there.